Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast for Saturday, January 2nd, 2010. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Happy New Year.
Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Buenos dias.
And Mr. Phil Wilson.
That was not good music.
I'm sorry. Come on. You're
it was
always
kinda okay. It was kinda sorta
futuristic.
X-File-ish, I guess.
So. Okay, because we're gonna do 2010 predictions, so that I wanted to do something that was electronic, digital. No?
Oh, okay. I got you now. Okay, I'm making the jump now.
All right. So you guys staying warm?
Barely.
Oh, man. Besides the fact we got to get out of here, this is ugly. We got a ton of stuff. We could do a 4-hour show today, but instead.
Oh, there's something to look forward to.
We're not. Anyone listening, we're not.
4 hours of us.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk about 2010 predictions that we've been kicking around. We've all sort of been talking about it from a lot of different aspects. And there are just so many areas to cover, and there are so many blogs, and especially stuff that we all read, that everybody seems to be doing their top lists and their 2010 predictions and so on and so forth. And so, of course, we have to do that as well. But let's start off with mobile and what's happening in the mobile space. It's a huge topic for the always on, always connected lifestyle. And Tim, what do you think is the hot areas in the mobile space? What's going on?
Well, I think that we're going to see a huge move into the kind of local and social aspects of mobile. I think that early in the year, Android is going to take some sort of a lead over the iPhone. And obviously the iPhone will catch up by summertime or so when they have the next rev out there. But I think that there's going to be a lot of action, and I think that, it's going to be definitely narrowed down to the Android camp and the iPhone camp.
What do you mean by take the lead, Tim? You mean in local, specifically in
areas you mentioned? Yeah, there's two things that I think are really interesting. One is the Nexus One, which is the Google reference phone, which is coming out on T-Mobile here in the U.S. Sometime early next year. They're having an event next week to announce it. It leapfrogs from a technology standpoint the iPhone platform, and it also has enough power to run the Google Goggles, which I think is a very interesting development on the Android platform, and I would assume would go to other platforms as well, which allows you to take a picture of something and then it will run a Google search on what the object was that you took a picture of. So that could be a product. It could be a person. There's just a lot of possibilities there. So I think that opens up a whole new kind of way to look at the mobile web. And it's a way to bring things really local. I mean, just think you could be at a restaurant, take a picture of it, and get the Yelp reviews directly on your handset immediately.
Yeah. So OS features is what you mean by taking the lead.
Hardware itself. I think they're going to have a lead for a period of time, unless Apple doesn't come out with a tablet in late January like everyone expects and actually revs the iPhone early.
Well, and they're saying we can expect, and I know Steve's blogged about this, we can expect three times as many iPhone apps, upwards of 300,000 in year 2010. But of course, Android apps will increase even faster than that because they're starting from a lower base.
I think Apple is going to have to, they're going to have to start putting their foot down on the apps. I really believe that we're going to see a pairing of apps at some point in time, because right now it's 100,000 apps or 300,000 by the end of the year. That's insane. There's really not that much need for that many apps.
Like kicking some out, are you thinking, Phil?
I don't know if they'll. Yeah, I think they'll kick some of them out of the App Store. Maybe there'll be a second channel where apps are available. But I don't know where that would be. But or maybe there's just a stronger, sorting, system built around the Genius system. I don't know.
I think that's
ridiculous. People that I talk to that say, hey, I should have an iPhone app. Well, unless it's really something kick ass, I don't think you're going to
really bother.
It's going to be, it's not going to happen.
So. Yeah. All these copycat things are, you know, way out of control. No doubt about it.
But I think that Tim brings up some interesting stuff on the mobile side, and really it, you know, the mobile landscape is changing because of the ability to have a smartphone that does everything. And I think, you know, my prediction was that this will really impact how netbook, the small screen netbooks, progress. I think they're going to be the way of the past here pretty soon. I don't think people want to have they either want to have a small screen a la mobile, or they want to have a 15 inch screen to do their work on. I don't think they want necessarily anything in between.
Well, I think it's a price point issue. If a netbook, which delivers sort of this small computer, casual computer experience with, say, $99, I'd want one of those. I mean, the problem right now is that
why would you care? Why would you carry a netbook and a smartphone at the same time if they basically do the same thing?
Well, battery life is one, and maybe a slightly larger screen is another. You could actually do some work. I mean,
I just don't think that, you know, mainstream, the regular public wants that many different flipping screens. They don't have that kind of time. They don't want to be dedicated to a screen.
I was going to say it comes down to what you can fit in a pocket too. You know,
that's what it's all about, baby.
Well, and unless there's a trend for larger pocketed cargo pants in 2010, then I think you may be right.
The parachute pant is coming back.
There you go. Well, you know, I'm curious because Julio, I don't know if you've done anything on this, but one of the things that we're talking to our clients about in the home furnishings business, you know, we do this trend forecasting for the home furnishings business. Are products like Good Guide. So based on what you just said, Tim, about the Yelp, you're in a restaurant and you pull stuff up right away. Julio, I'm wondering if you've looked at any of the apps like Good Guide, because we've been talking to our clients about the fact that they really need to understand their supply chain, because when a consumer can walk in and scan a barcode and see how green a company is, or whether they're employing child labor to manufacture any part of the end product, consumers are going to be empowered to not only find the best price, but also to understand how green this company is, or how socially responsible they are, and so forth. You know, whether they're doing animal testing with shampoo, you know, that sort of thing. Are you looking at that, at those kinds of apps?
I am. The thing that kind of excites me, and I think is, what I think is going to explode this year with Android, with the iPhone, is sort of the mobile dashboard paradigm, where people with the device in their pockets are going to be empowered to do a number of things that they've sort of been able to do, but will really be able to do this year. You know, that includes, you know, research, you know, barcode scanners that supply them with the information they need to make purchasing decisions. Location-aware services like Foursquare and Gowalla and Looped that will, you know, let them, you know, sort of figure out where they want to eat, where their friends are. Basically, people will have a device in their pocket that will supply them, you know, with the information they need. You know, where are my friends? What do I need to buy? What's the best price on a product? You know, things like that. The list goes on and on. The device in your pocket will become powerful enough, and the apps and services will become sophisticated enough that, you know, the computer, to a large extent, when you're on the move, will become irrelevant. You'll be able to do everything on your handheld device.
Well, and when you spoke about the power of mobile, this is something I wanted to throw in. 2010 is going to be the year when 4G starts to take hold, and that changes things in a big way.
Oh, good point.
In the way of mobile video, for sure. And also, you know, mobile payment services, which don't relate strictly to higher speed, but mobile payment services are going to come on much stronger. But getting back to 4G, there are going to be dozens of cities by year end that have 4G through Clearwire, Sprint, and Verizon alone. And maybe AT&T will actually get their act together too.
Yeah, good point. Well, you know, let's talk about mobile with bridge devices. You know, you kind of touch on it, Tim, about, you know, $99 price point for a netbook, you know, those sorts of things. And of course, the next rev of the netbook chips are coming from Intel. And so there'll be better graphics and speedier chips and so forth. But, you know, the rumor du jour is the January 26th event that everyone surmises will be the Apple tablet release. And I mean, do we need to, I don't know if we need to add any gasoline to the fire.
The seas will part and yeah, a large man with a flowing beard will come forth and bring and lay at your feet the apple slate, the slate.
Really, Steve grew a flowing beard?
He did. He did. And he got this thing from a burning bush, I understand.
For the flowing beard. Boy, this is a lot of hype about a really big bone.
It is.
I mean, does anybody else feel that?
I heard it was a 10-inch screen, which is, it sounds outrageously large.
Yeah, it does.
Well, like I said, I don't think there's anything in between. I think you got your mobile, and then you got to get into the bigger screens where people can actually see it. But is this really that big of a deal? Is it just, I mean, it's just like a big iPod Touch, right?
Well, can I back up and provide a little context? I think what we might be missing here is the fact that ebook readers like the Kindle, they're kind of popular, but they're also kind of lame because they're very limited. Netbooks also, you know, they're kind of popular, but they're also kind of limited. There's a need for a leap here that I think Apple will help make, which is to provide functionality in three key areas. You know, people that want the book reading experience on the go will get a product this year that will make the Kindle look really lame, a product that will let them read their books, but will also let them do other things like check their email, browse the web. So some people will want that. Some people will want a netbook that isn't lame. I haven't seen a netbook yet that is worth buying. I think that it will finally arrive. And then there's a whole you know, iPhone on steroids thing. It sort of breaks down to three categories: where people that want sort of the iPhone experience, people that want the netbook experience, and people that want the ebook reading experience. All three of those areas will leap forward this year because we'll finally have devices that do this well. We didn't have that last year. We'll have that this year.
So, Julio, do you think that periodicals like magazines and perhaps even newspapers will change because of the Apple tablet and what it will allow you to do?
I believe so. If that doesn't happen, I'll be really disappointed because there's a real opportunity.
Is it going to change markedly from where it would normally change without the Apple tablet? The fact of the matter is online magazines are print is moving online. Doesn't make any difference what the device is. It's still moving online.
Right.
Maybe it'll accelerate a little bit, but what's
accelerating it is color screens on e-readers, if you will. And that's coming from a number of providers. And that's, that really changes the whole, you know, reading online thing or reading on a smaller handheld device, because the black and white e-readers just don't cut it for a lot of people. And they really haven't made that much of an inroad when you look at the number of units sold.
Yeah, I think that the medium has to change, because if you look at the Kindle and the Nook, that whole paper paradigm, even though you get crazy long battery life out of those devices, it still doesn't work in an electronic format for me personally. And I'd like to see something that allows you to embed video and other things that would really change the medium.
Well, and the most exciting thing to me about this whole area is micropayments finally being real.
Yes.
So in the same way that Apple implemented in the App Store the ability for game providers, for example, to give away a game, and here you get three levels for free. If you want to go to 4, 5, 6, you've got to pay X. If you want to go to 7, 8, 9, you've got to pay another fee so that you can continue to play the game. And there's an economic incentive for the game provider to continue to add functionality and make the app or the game better and better. Well, imagine the same thing with publications, is that, you know, you basically give away the first three chapters of your book and then you sell the rest, or you provide layers of functionality in an online publication and you basically give away the container for that. And then people can buy a subscription that is fulfilled every time they're online, you know, those sorts of things. I think that, I mean, that this is one of the most, that's why I put e-commerce in as one of my predictions, because I'm really excited about the possibilities that 2010 will have with, you know, mobile credit card readers for the iPhone and Android, and what local Minnesota company Alvenda is doing with essentially e-commerce and a widget, you know, those sorts of things. I mean, there's a lot of really great things that are coming to fruition in the micropayment and e-commerce space.
Well, yeah, and how about that new startup Square that's going to have the little device you plug in your earphone jack to be able to do occasional credit card transactions. But I think the point you made earlier, Steve, how the gaming industry is actually driving this is fascinating. There is a ton of money being made in online gaming by a handful of startups that are largely unknown to a lot of people. And so online gaming, social gaming, and microtransactions and the whole social commerce or virtual commerce, virtual transactions is driving things that will affect the media industry. I totally believe that.
So one of the things that we talked about before we started recording was this whole category called curation. And so regardless of what is the end target, if it's a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop or a desktop, doesn't really matter. But with all the content that's out there now, I mean, I'm sure you guys are in the same boat that I am. I right now have 36 podcasts, and there are some that have like 12 episodes I haven't listened to. It's just too much. I mean, I just have way too much. And so curation is, you know, I'm gravitating more and more toward meme trackers like Tech Meme and Blog Runner from the New York Times. But those are algorithm based, and they're just, it's just not quite enough context. And Julio, let me throw this to you, because you are right in the midst of newspapers and what, you know, the paradigm and all the things that people are looking at in terms of, you know, how do we change this? And then we all have our, I'm sure each one of us has an opinion on being a super editor, being a curator. And where are you guys all seeing this going? Julio, let me start with you.
Well, in terms of curation, I'll give you an example. I subscribe to a lot of RSS feeds, and I've come up with a lot of stuff, which is really cool, which I've always, you know, wanted to share with others. And I until recently hadn't found a really good way to do that. You know, sharing within Google Reader doesn't really work because not a lot of people use Google Reader. But I suddenly, you know, hit on a magic formula, which is posterous. You know, I'll come up with something really cool in a nerdy sci-fi vein on Google Reader, and then
we lost you there for a second, Julio.
I'm sorry, I am having a little tech glitch here. Anyway, posterous. Now, you know, with just a couple of clicks, now if I find something really cool, you know, about sci-fi or whatever, I can drop it into my posterous blog. And that has become a way to sort of curate stuff that I find online and I want to share, you know, with my Facebook friends, with my Twitter friends, and it's the reason this has been kind of an eye opener is because it's easy, it's fast, it doesn't take a lot of time, and so my blogging on Posterous, I have this blog which sort of focuses on nerdy sci-fi stuff, has just exploded, and it's been an eye-opener for me, because if you had told me, you know, a year or 2 years ago that I would have even had time to even bother with this, I would have laughed, because you know, I felt so busy at the time. But Posterous is one example of a service that makes it so easy, so effortless, that it's very easy to do, and that's sort of a curation model, as you described.
Yes, it is. I find it, I'm myself using it more and more too, and I'm using it more as a social bookmarking kind of a thing, like I used to use Delicious, where when I see something good, I'll just email it to my posterists and maybe put a one sentence description in with what I think is interesting about a particular article. But what I wanted to say about curation, Steve, can I jump in here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I think it's really about the continued rise of content. The whole this particular prediction. I think that it's really going to be the decade of content supremacy, and that anyone from a personal standpoint, now from a career standpoint, I think anyone involved in developing content professionally is in a good position. And I would even say, that the field of journalism, and not just speaking in terms of media professionals like Julio, but in spite of the talk that journalism is dying and this kind of thing, I think it in fact is probably the most exciting profession to be involved in now, because even kids that are going into school, yeah, maybe they won't go the traditional route in media. They probably won't. The jobs won't be there, but there's a rise in what we call the brand journalist. Anyone that can develop content and tell stories and learn how to do that well is going to do very well in the coming decade. And it's a growth industry. And curation is a piece of that. I mean, people are going to rely more and more on their friends helping them figure out what's important, and knowing how to filter through stuff. All this stuff on the web is going to become an important individual, skill. And I think by being active online and sharing content online, anyone can learn to do that. Anyone can be a journalist of sorts, but they do have to work at it. And so, yeah, I think that's where curation and the content prediction is kind of going,
But I think you have to have, a certain amount of technology that will kind of filter for you based on authority, right? So let's say that, the five of us are plugged into Minnesota technology, as an example. We would have more authority than somebody else that maybe is on the West Coast or something. And that influences the way that what the links that we would send out would be ordered on a meme tracker kind of a thing. So I think that there's a technology piece of this, and then there's a piece that is hand done by humans.
Right, right. And that will never go away. Right?
Well, and here's one of the things that was probably the most telling comments in 2009 was, I know I've said this before, but I had an opportunity to interview Dries Buytaert, the guy that founded Drupal, back in the spring. And we had about a 45-minute Skype call. And he said this, and so did Matt Mullenweg. I watched the WordPress video from WordPress Camp out in San Francisco, and he said the same thing. And essentially, both of them were positioning their respective platforms as media-centric platforms, and talking about how every organization, every company, and every individual will need to think of themselves as a media organization. Because that you can't just, publish static web pages and put your website up and just leave it. It's got to be dynamic. You've got to be adding video. You've got to be curating your own stuff. You've got to be looking at a 360-degree view of your own products and market and delivering things and positioning things. If somebody comes out, if you're making Dweebazarbs and somebody comes out and announces a material that will change the course of Dweebazarb production in the world, wouldn't it be a good idea for you to maybe blog about that if you make Dweebazarbs and say, okay, it is a paradigm shift and we are looking at it. And oh, by the way, it's at least a year away, rather than have your market sit back and wait for it. You got to be in the game. You've got to be in the conversation. And that was really their kind of both of their positions. So that was the other part of this whole curation discussion and self-publishing area was that excited me was thinking, yeah, you know what? We all are media centric.
And every company, certainly those that are that think of themselves as being innovative or in technology at all, become publishers, whether they like it or not. They better figure out a way how they're going to be better publishers of content, and that means virtually real time for all of them.
Yep. But Phil, let me ask you, because I mean you've been in big media, traditional media, at a senior level, even with today's podcast, we had a lot of content to cover, and you were able to position it in a way that allowed us perhaps to make this flow a lot better than it would have.
So you're telling me that I'm the aggregator?
Well, no. Here's where I'm going to go with this is the fact that. I can tell a fairly decent story with slides, and then there's Ken Burns. I'm not Ken Burns. Okay.
You can do the Ken Burns effect on your
that's
slides.
That's right. But somewhere in there is a middle ground, and maybe this is for both you and Julio because of your respective backgrounds and engagements with traditional media. Is how does curation fit into an amateur direction, or is it just going to self-select to what you talked about, Tim, with authority? That people with authority that will get better at curating themselves and being better editors. What are you seeing, Phil, out there?
Well, it comes down to relevance, because there is so much out there now. The access to any kind of information that you want is at your fingertips, but most real human beings, don't want to spend that kind of time. So it comes down to relevant content. And I mean, I think that's where the whole curation thing comes into effect. You want to have stuff that's relevant to you. That's where as Graham says, the self-select concept comes in, that if it's important to me, it will find me concept. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, some will say, well, that's just sort of the lazy way of doing it. But again, it's a matter of what kind of time in your day do you have to spend to find, all this information and dig for it. So I think it really comes down to that relevance and, what's important to you and what's important to the people that you speak with.
And I would say, I don't know if you guys experience this, but I'm over at my sister's Christmas Eve day, we had a big family celebration in the morning because then, one of my sisters and then our family, we have our own respective adventures at night. And so we're over there, and what am I doing? I'm running software updates on my sister's computer. And she's saying, no, I'm having trouble with such and such. And, so I've been doing tech support while in between the meal and opening gifts. And when somebody's going to go buy an HDTV, they call me. Not that I'm some HDTV expert, but I'm certainly more up to speed on what's going on than they are. And so people gravitate toward people that at least come across as knowing what they're talking about. And I can see both positives and negatives there. Positives in, being an influencer and helping people and, those sorts of things, and being a curator that, like you, Julio, you're doing the sci-fi stuff on Posterous, and people have started to gravitate because it's delightful. It's fun to see what you're going to come up with next. And it, it doesn't take a lot of work, and they don't have to spend hours reading some huge article. Is that kind of the way it's going to go? It's just going to sort of self-select that people will gain trust on a curator?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where it's at. I mean, I think Garrick Van Buren has come very close with his curation tool, of which I'm drawing a blank on the name of.
Collect.
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 That's it. I'm sorry. Sorry, Garrick. So I know that he's sort of that project is a little bit on hold for him, but I know that he was talking about bringing it back and, kind of relaunching it. This concept of allowing a group of people and what they read to sort of help curate for you. I think that there's a lot of brilliance in that, and making it easily accessible and making it easy for anybody to use. Garrick will be the first to admit it was a little bit, inside, a little bit geeky the way he had things set up as far as being able to access things. Not a lot of buttons, a whole lot of typing. And I think the happy medium is to get that to be an easy tool to use. Once it's easy, once it's easily accessible, and once it's relevant, then boom, you're there.
Yep. Well, this is, even though this wasn't on our official topic list, this is a bit of a segue into everything that we've talked about right now, from mobile to the Apple tablet, netbooks to, curation and self-publishing.
Indicates that we have no life.
Indicates that we have no life. There's that. But it's all centric to cloud computing. I mean, it's all internet-centric services and I mean, everything.
Well, that was definitely on my list. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, definitely at the core. Well, so if we're looking at cloud computing as a category,
which has always been there, by the way,
but I think about Chrome OS from Google and Jolly Cloud, which I'm really intrigued by. And I'm just going to ask this question. I know this is sort of out of left field, but you kind of alluded to it, Phil, when you were talking about some people want to do serious work with a 15-inch laptop and, yada, yada, yada. But how much of what we do on a daily basis could be done with a cloud-based operating system and an inexpensive netbook or a tablet that you could put into a stand and have a little wireless keyboard and mouse and use that with cloud-based applications? How important in 2010 will it be 50% cloud, 50% local, or will it be 80% cloud, 20% local? I mean, what do you guys think as a percentage? I'll start with you, Graham.
Oh, I would say the latter for sure. I'm more of an 80-20 guy in that regard. And from a consumer standpoint, consumers don't care, if it's in the cloud or local. They just want to get something done. And obviously, cloud is a huge trend for 2010. The consumer cloud apps will continue to drive enterprise IT adoption of the cloud, I firmly believe. Mm-hmm. And we saw in 2009 twice the number of firms who are testing and piloting cloud programs than in 2008. So, or the amount of projects double. Now, it's still maybe not there. It's going to take some years before cloud really gets adopted in the enterprise space. But there's no question that the consumer, again, is leading the enterprise in that respect. And in that respect, I just want to throw in another thing, too, that I think the cloud, the hardware and software model models relating to the cloud, one of my colleagues, Tom Kiefer, thinks that's going to spill back into IT talent models in that, hey, why hire when you can rent help in IT? Sure. You know what I mean? And this gets into another one of my trends that really didn't make the list, but I really think that, the nature of employment, the nature of a job, and even the definition of work is going to continue to change in 2010 towards, and this is especially in white collar ranks, of course, is going to continue to tilt towards the contractor. That's no secret to us and to many of our colleagues in the development community. But more and more, a job is not going to mean a full-time kind of a thing, for 5-10 years with one employer. I'm getting off track here, but getting back to cloud, absolutely, the consumer is going to be leaning more and more in that direction, I think, and that the move away from the desktop is continuing to hurt Microsoft. They're working to try to counter that, but it's a noticeable trend for sure.
I think that what goes along with cloud computing and more use of you know, that space, I think comes along with security concerns. I think that you're going to see a whole lot of stories in 2010 or 2010, depending on what you want to call it. You're going to see a lot of people saying, hey, wait a minute. That's all my stuff up there. Do I want to share all my stuff or where I am or what I'm doing or what I'm looking at? I think that you're going to see a little bit more awareness. That just comes with mainstream acceptance, but you're going to see more awareness of privacy and security.
Yeah, no doubt. And there will continue to be failures. What was it, the Magnolia service that lost everybody's data last year or something? But yeah. You know, I think savvy consumers are realizing they can back things up. And what is that service we're testing now, Tim, Backupify or something like that?
Yeah.
Just backing up all our social media stuff, social networking stuff.
Yep.
Well, mm-hmm. I will also say that, excuse me, to your point about Posterous, Julio, is Posterous is essentially that post anywhere capability is also a backup mechanism because your videos go to your YouTube account and your images go to your Flickr account. And you can also have this thing post to a WordPress or Typepad blog and so on and so forth. Yep. So it is kind of a backup in a way. Well, one thing I'm going to put this in the show notes because it was a big deal book to me, and it was Daniel Pink's book, Free Agent Nation. It was copyrighted in 2001, and I've read it a couple of times, and I gave it to somebody. I don't have it anymore. I forgot to put my name in it probably, but at any rate, it's to speaking to your point, Graham, about the shift that began to occur in the late 90s to more and more, you know, subcontractor, contractor, free agent type work, temp work, you know, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And I think people would find that to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've got a good link I can give you for the show notes too, and how, you know, the 21st century economy is going to be more about temporary workers, temporary interim contractor, whatever you want to call it. Also, I've got a good link about the whole telecommuting co-working kind of phenomenon.
Yeah. Yep.
That comes into play when we start talking about contractors. And I know we've had some local activity in that regard and blog posts about what's going on locally. So, yeah, I'll send you those.
I don't know. I think the next decade is going to find it a little bit, Graham, that there's going to be a pushback on that. I think that just from the economy standpoint, people are going to realize that part of being an employer or part of being a business is being an employer. And I think that this outsourcing thing may start to wane simply because it's not necessarily great for the economy. Businesses don't necessarily, yes, they may save money in the short term by outsourcing stuff, but they don't really build, lasting organizations. Maybe that's just, you know, me daydreaming and fantasizing about that return to, you know, people that make long-term commitments to their employees. But I think that there's a real opportunity. I think there's a real chance anyway that there's going to be some pushback on that.
Well, I think you raise a very good point. And the whole issue of how hard it is to be a contractor, and particularly when we get into things like healthcare costs, I mean, that's a huge, huge problem for contractors and, you know, something I've been dealing with for 20 years or more. But I think you're right, Phil. But I think HR departments and corporations are going to start managing their contractors and taking care of them in a much better way than maybe they have in the past.
Yeah, but doesn't that then just make them employees rather than contractors?
That there's a fine line there, and that's one of the issues. In fact, one of these links I'm going to send you, Steve, is calling for three specific things that Washington needs to recognize. And one of those difficulties that employers have is how do you classify a contractor versus an employee? And we're going to see changes coming along those lines. And the government is the last to catch up on this stuff. You know, I mean, they still report about jobs all the time, you know, and a large part of the economy doesn't have traditional jobs. And so, This is part of a longer term trend, and this link I think will provide some interesting background on that.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be good. Well, it's, I don't know. It's just, it's going to be really interesting to see how this stuff all shakes out, because you know, regardless of what your feeling is about healthcare, and it was interesting to hear some of the leaders in Silicon Valley some time ago talk about how it could be, you know, universal healthcare could be one of the biggest boons to innovation that this country's ever seen, because there are so many people that are right on the edge of wanting to go out on their own, or they're free agents, and, you know, healthcare is a big deal. I mean, I know what we spend as a family of four on healthcare, and it's not pretty. I mean, it's like, oh my God, how does Joe Average do this?
I agree. In each state, you've got to be able to have more choices than just a couple, you know, which is kind of what we've had. And if anything comes out of this at all, it's got to be a more competitive environment for self-employed and very small businesses to choose, you know, and individuals to choose. That's my hope.
Okay, well, let's get back to some of our predictions.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Let's
talk Twitter. Come on, because everybody was like, yeah, Twitter was the buzzword. So let's talk Twitter. What's going to happen to Twitter in 2010?
Oh, I got a good one. I think it's going IPO. Yeah, and I got a link on that too. But yeah, I'm predicting that two of the three majors in social networking will IPO in 2010. It's going to be either Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or, you know, pick any two. I think we're going to see it, because the IPO market is definitely picking up. It's picking up already, and so is M&A. And, you know, they could always get acquired, because once you go into play and file your intention,
then there's a price.
Initial public offering, then buyers can step up and take you out before you go IPO. But I think
But my concern is that if you go IPO with something like Twitter, if I'm somebody that's interested in buying stock in Twitter, I want to say, okay, now, so tell me again how I'm going to make money on this deal.
There you go. That's the big question mark. And, you know, I think LinkedIn's the only one that's really making money, and I think they were the first to make money. Now, whether or not they're making as much money as Facebook, I don't know. But Twitter is the one that hasn't shown yet that it's making a lot of money. But still, I think they are making money. They do have revenues. A lot of people think they don't have revenues. That's wrong. They do. They're continuing to innovate. They're going to be introducing more and more ways that they're going to make money. You know, and we'll see how the IPO market goes. But yeah, if you're not showing profits, how can you go IPO? A lot would say. And I think they may still be far from profitability. So we'll see.
All they need to do is buy Bitly and come out with a kind of enterprise, you know,
there you go,
Twitter stats kind of a thing for pay. I mean, I think Twitter is going to go IPO because the founders who did Blogger learned their lesson about being acquired by someone like Google. So I think they're going to take it the full way. And I also think that Facebook is going to go IPO for sure, because they can only hang out so long without the founders there and everybody that's been working there for, you know, 3 or 4 years wanting some sort of an exit. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, Julio, as the author of Twitter Means Business, what are your thoughts about not just Twitter making money, but others using it as a channel?
Well, what I think is going to happen this year is kind of a grand convergence. I mean, there have been a lot of distinctions made. You know, there's blogging, there's microblogging, there's tweeting. You know, tweeting and microblogging are sometimes used interchangeably, sometimes not. There are various ways to sort of, you know, update your status in a verbose or a succinct manner. And all of this is kind of smushing together. And I think this is the year where, you know, those distinctions are going to become irrelevant. They're becoming irrelevant to me. I just get information out there. And I just kind of do it effortlessly without thinking about it. And I, in my head, I no longer make distinctions about whether this is going out on Twitter or this is going out on my tech blog, because if it goes out on one place, it goes out everywhere because I've got the mechanism set up for that. Mm-hmm. So these distinctions are gonna you know, and Twitter itself, you know, the status update as a Twitter mechanism itself is going to sort of fade a little bit because, you know, everybody's doing it. You know, Facebook looks like Twitter. Twitter looks like Facebook. All of these distinctions aren't going to matter anymore. People are just going to do this without thinking about it.
I agree. It's like breathing, you know. And I guess this is one reason why I think that they're going to try to take Twitter IPO just at the top of its popularity. But it'll become, you know, it already is becoming somewhat of a commodity, as you say.
Yeah, no question. Well, here's what I'd like to do in the remaining time. And this was your suggestion, Graham, and I thought it was a great one. Outrageous, wild ass predictions about what's going to happen here in Minnesota with respect to innovation in the web and internet.
Yeah. Well, do you want me to jump in?
Yeah, you start.
Okay. I got a couple. I'm on this M&A thing and VC thing, and I've got a great link about how VC is going way up in 2010. I mean, we're already, you know, we're going to see a much better year for venture capital raising this year than we did last. But my predictions would be these. I think we're going to see a couple of major internet and tech companies in Minnesota get acquired in 2010, possibly go IPO. And I'll go out on a limb. I'm going to say Compellent is either going to go, well, they already are IPO, so they're going to get acquired, is my prediction, by the likes of an EMC, a NetApp, or even a Dell. And I'll go out on a limb and say internet broadcasting will get acquired maybe a Hearst or an AOL. So there are my two.
Okay.
Check back on December 31st and we'll see where we are.
All right. Phil?
Phil? Wild ass predictions?
Yeah. Or outrageous, however you want to position it.
I don't know. You know, I don't know if I have a wild ass prediction. I really don't have a wild ass prediction. I don't
think
I'm too cerebral. I don't know.
All right. Okay.
No, I don't.
How about you, Tim?
I think we're going to finally see that Minnesota breakout startup happen. And I don't think it's going to be these late stage companies like what Graham was talking about.
No, they aren't breakout anymore. They've already broken out, or at least one of them has.
Yeah, I think we're going to see someone that just kind of pops up, that comes out of left field and surprises everyone. And I think we are going to see the economy improve, and it's going to create an opportunity where someone can, you know, kind of all of a sudden come on the national stage and be one of these Twitter-like startups that everyone talks about, but it's going to be based here.
Okay.
Okay. What's it going to be?
Yeah.
Have you got some candidates?
I don't know.
You're just playing the odds. Now, come on. That's just playing the odds.
No, I think there's so much going on right now. There's so much talent here that it just has to happen. I'm just not sure if I'm smart enough to pick which one is going to break out.
All right. I do have a wild ass prediction, Steve.
Okay. All right.
You ready?
Yep.
Minovate will actually figure out a way to make money.
Hey, I was going to go there too. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to IPO.
I think we're going to have to hire somebody to do it. But I.
Oh, so
we'll piss away all the profits right away. But there other than that.
There we go.
Well, we could always just get acquired by Google. Let's say that.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Works for me. Julio?
Well, I got an announcement. This is breaking news. I'm going to be heading up a new company that will take upon itself to extend the downtown St. Paul Skyway system out into the neighborhoods. I'm just kidding.
Here in Apple Valley, would they put up
I moved out of the Skyway system out into a neighborhood, and I'm missing the Skyway system today, you know, with the cold, and so I'm just kidding around. But on a more serious note, we talked about, you know, the mobile dashboard device in your pocket. It's sort of your digital nerve center. And the downside to that is that in Minnesota, in many cases, has lagged. People have been a little slow to sort of figure out how to use that properly. And there have been a couple of developments that give me hope that, you know, Minnesota will sort of start to get it a little more. In today's paper, for instance, I talk about how Metro Transit and, you know, some third party developers are starting to get hip to, you know, getting transit data onto a mobile device in a digestible and easily accessible fashion. And I think Minovate blogged about Train Brain, one of the apps that I write about in today's paper. So that gives me hope, because one of my frustrations has been not being able to pull up my bus schedule easily on an iPhone until recently. Another piece I recently did was, you know, the iPod Touch really taking off in the K-12 classroom. Mm-hmm. That's been a source of frustration for me, because my kid's school is, you know, very computer centric. You know, they're using the iMacs, but they're kind of completely oblivious to this whole mobile thing. And I in a piece I profiled, you know, some schools in the metro area here who are aggressively embracing the iPod Touch. It's very exciting, and I'm hopeful, you know, like for instance, my kid's school will do something like that.
Interesting.
Hey, remember the eMate, Newton eMate,
sure,
way back in the day?
Oh God, yes.
I wonder why Apple hasn't sort of adopted that sort of form factor, you know, taking an iPhone / iPod Touch, but sticking a keyboard in it and making it approximately that size, because I think that would be great for education.
Well, the Apple, the much rumored Apple tablet, hardly anybody talks about this, but I think that's going to be huge in education.
Yeah. Well,
but will it have a physical keyboard as an option, though? I guess is a.
Well, the what I think is going, you know, one of my frustrations with the iPhone is Apple hasn't provided the Bluetooth link to its own small form factor Bluetooth keyboard. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I think the reason they've held back on that is because they want to do that first with their tablet device. I think the keyboard that they already have for use with the iMac will work with the tablet. And then by extension, they'll throw that out to the iPhone as well.
Well, except though, the patent that has been kicked around as the interface that everyone's talked about as being the wild interface is a Braille-like nub capability as you go over the keyboard, so you'll have a tactile touch with this new tablet. And so perhaps you won't need an external keyboard. Maybe it will be good enough.
And absolutely, you may not need it, but some people will want to do that, and I think Apple will throw that option out
to
people.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that we didn't talk about, but is something that I think we're going to see more and more of, is this idea of having a dockable portable that you throw, say, your iPhone into a dock, and it becomes your whole kind of desktop with a large monitor and a keyboard and all that kind of stuff. So you could actually do work on it.
Yeah.
Do we see that happening as a trend?
I do with a tablet. Absolutely.
Well, I think there's a possibility, but it doesn't necessarily serve the business of making computer components. It doesn't necessarily serve them well to have dockable. It's always more important to have more things that you have to buy.
And that category, I think, in the coming year is going to fork. It's going to go in two very interesting and very distinct directions. There's going to be the Apple tablet, which essentially will be a melding of the iPhone and the Mac into a full-featured, ultra-portable device. But then the other path is the Google one, where we're going to have an ultra-affordable, cloud-based device that basically lets you do the you know, every you have everything on the internet sort of thing. A lot of people have tried to do that. No one has done it well, and that's why a lot of people poo-poo it. But I think that Google is going to show the way. It's going to be the first company to do this properly, and a lot of light bulbs are going to go on over people's heads.
Boy, Tim, what was your outrageous prediction?
I already talked about the first breakout startup thing.
Oh yeah.
It's just a question of who. You know,
yeah, Steve, exactly. Yeah.
What is your wild ass prediction?
All right, so here's mine. Mine will be that
WAP,
there will be a killer mobile app for news aggregation developed in Minnesota, and it'll be a must-have app for anybody that's got any kind of internet mobile device, whether it's an iPhone, Android, smartphone, of Palm, whatever, a tablet, et cetera, that there will be a breakout method of aggregation that goes way beyond the meme trackers.
Who's doing it? Who's building it?
I can't say.
Oh, come on.
No, I can't. I can't.
You mean you know who's building it?
Well, there's actually two. Well, I guess I'm not going to go here, but there's actually two.
Sorry, you went there, dude.
There's actually two that are looking at this category. Two different startups. So anyway, you guys.
That will be an interesting space to watch. I agree with you, Steve.
It will be.
I don't know if there is such a thing as a killer app in journalism.
Well, we'll see.
A good writer. That's the killer app.
Doesn't really matter. Gotta be a good writer.
Yeah. No kidding.
Good curator.
Well, gentlemen, I know Julio, you got to drop off. You've got another radio show to do, and everybody stay warm, will you?
Who are we sharing Julio with?
Karen Housley is going to have me on her radio show.
No, we're going to keep you off then. We want you exclusive.
Okay, I'm going from the podcast realm to the traditional radio realm. So
there you go. Cool. All right. Well, guys, take care, and we'll have some fun here in 2010. I think.
Oh, we sure will.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care, gentlemen.
Happy New Year.
You too.
Happy New Year.
Bye now.
Yep. See ya.
Thoughts are things like knowing brings, future shining bright. Hopeless dreams need glowing schemes, starving for a light. Long missed trains and summer rains, hissing fire and ice. Dousing flames and placing blames, short-lived truths and lies. But that's how it goes. Yeah, that's how it goes. Oh, that's how it goes. Yeah, that's how it goes. But that's how it goes. Yeah, that's how it goes. Oh, that's how it goes. Yeah, that's how it goes. And no one knows, driving down the heat, just how low can this scene go till we skip a beat. Second tries and sleepless skies, this is where we meet. Telling cries, the tightrope highs, thunder split the street. But that's how it goes. That's how it goes. Oh, that's how it goes. Yeah, that's how it goes. But that's how it goes.